All right, everybody, welcome back to Hino's Home Show. I'm Hino. This right here is my show. And every week we try to talk about how to make the most out of your biggest investment, which is, of course, your home. It is for most people. As always, we're brought to you by our good friends over at Accurate Mortgage, the Accurate Mortgage Group, I should say. Whether you're looking to purchase a home or refinance the one you have, give them a call. They'll get you closed and back to life. Well, we got a great show for you this week. Some of your burning listener questions, we're going to answer those. We've been getting a whole lot of them in the old email there. You can always email us at hino@hinoshomeshow.com. That's the easy way to do it. Then we're going to be visiting with our special guest this week, David Wilbanks. And we're going to be talking about something that's not usually considered a sexy topic, but it's homeowners insurance. It's something we all have. We all need to pay for. And David just got very excited about that. So maybe it is a sexy topic. You never know.
Awesome.
And then we're going to be talking a little bit about home trends and what's going on lately, and you know, what's the big trends in what builders are doing and what they're maybe not doing so much anymore. But first up, we're going to talk about a subject that's near and dear to everybody's heart. There's so many home shows on TV that are ripping houses apart and putting them back together, and they're renovating this and renovating that. And that's of course renovations, and basically how to pay for it, because, you know, it's one thing to have a big dream of adding that extra bedroom or having your kitchen be twice as big and that kind of thing, but it ain't cheap. And also, you know, one of the things that's when you're looking to buy a home, one of the great ways to be able to get into a great neighborhood that might be a little bit out of your reach, or let's say you find a home that is almost perfect. It's got everything you want except for this one thing. If it only had an extra bedroom, or if it only had a two-car garage or a bigger kitchen or something, everything else would be perfect. Well, that's the time that you need to renovate. And you can do that now with a renovation loan. It's a brand new loan product that's been out. Well, I say brand new, but it's been out for a little while. And it allows you to purchase the home and have money to fix it all up, all in the same shot. You know, you don't have to do two different things. And, you know, most people don't have a bunch of money to buy the house and fix it up at the same time, because it's a big chunk.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Renovation loans allow you to do that. They allow you to roll it all up into one mortgage. The nice thing is that the value, you know, when you get your house appraised, it's based on what the property's gonna be worth, or what the appraiser thinks it's gonna be worth after all the work is done. So that's really great, because you can end up with some instant equity. You know, let's say you buy a house for $200,000 and you put $20,000 into it, and by the time you're done, it's worth $240,000. So you got instant $20,000 equity that you didn't have before. So it's a really great way to do that. Now there's a couple of different kinds. There are actually three different types of renovation loans out there, aren't there, Steve?
Right. So I wanted to bring this up because you mentioned this earlier. So a lot
by
of
the
these...
way, this is Steve Kenny over here. I didn't even introduce him earlier. He's sitting there over here,
hey,
so
guys.
Pretty. This is Steve Kenny, a mortgage guy extraordinaire, also with Accurate Mortgage.
Thank you. So I love that introduction, Hino. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
So like you mentioned earlier, there's a lot of these home shows out there where, you know, they take a couple and they live in a house right now and they're going to move to another one, or maybe they want to fix up the one that they're in.
Right.
So one of the questions I had was, how do they pay for this?
Right.
So did a little bit of research. A lot of people have probably seen that show Property Brothers.
Yeah. Right? Everybody probably assumes that the production company that's filming it pays for it.
Right, they don't.
Of course
they
not.
They actually have nothing to do with that. All of this happens through doing a renovation loan.
Oh.
So what these people are doing, and this is kind of the basics of how the process works. So if you decide that you're looking at a property, either one that you live in now, or if you're looking at purchasing a property that maybe needs a little bit of work, what you're going to do is get a contractor, a general contractor, somebody who's licensed and bonded, and you're going to go through the house with them and you're going to put together a plan. Here's the things that I absolutely want. Here's the things that I would like to do. Maybe, you know, if it's going to add a little extra value, especially, you want to do those.
Right.
But you're going to put together that needs list and that wants list. And then the contractor is going to put together a bid for you. So this bid is going to include cost of materials and then cost of labor. And then, of course, the builder's got to make a little bit of money out of it, too. Or the
we'll allow that. We'll allow that. Yeah.
That's how the world works, right?
Absolutely.
So once the builder, or the contractor, I should say, puts all of this together, they're going to submit it to the mortgage company, and then the mortgage company is going to take it from there. So when you're looking at doing something like this, you also want to take into consideration the fact that you're going to have to get a general contractor, and that's who's going to manage the project once you close on the loan.
Right. And that's a question actually that comes up a lot is, hey, can I do the work myself? Can I get all this money and do the work myself? And unfortunately, no. We did one for a client not too long ago who actually was in the business of building homes, and he could not be his own general contractor. That's just the way the rules are set out by Fannie Mae and FHA and all them. So we have to follow them. Yes. I guess there's just too much potential for fraud and that kind of thing if you're doing the work yourself, you know? So
yeah, and that's really part of that's done to protect you as the borrower too.
Yeah. In what way?
Oh, well, so you want to make sure that you're having professionals who work on it. So one of the requirements is having a contractor who's licensed and bonded. So if you just get, you know, your buddy down the street who does this stuff on the side, he's probably not going to be licensed. He's probably not going to be bonded. And the purpose of that is to protect you if, let's say, one of the subcontractors comes on your property and gets injured.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their insurance and their license and their bond are going to cover that sort of thing. So that way, you don't have to file a claim on your homeowner's insurance.
Aha, which we'll get to later. That made David smile right here. Not filing a claim just made him light up like a Christmas tree over here.
It did. Well, you know what I love about David too? And I love this about anybody who, what it is that they do for a living, they're passionate about and they get excited about.
Yeah.
It's like you and I talking about mortgages. He's the same way with homeowner's insurance.
Yeah. Well, that's true. Well, as we were mentioning a minute ago, there's three different types of renovation loans. There's the conventional kind through Fannie Mae. It's called a home style renovation loan. And on one of those, you definitely need a contractor. It has to go through a contractor, and there's you know, the minimum repair amount is at least $5,000. So you can't just like, you know, get a renovation loan just to buy a stove or something, you know, unless it's a $5,000 stove, you know, but and then there's also a couple that FHA has, a 203K loan, which you mentioned the Property Brothers, a lot of their loans on that show, those are 203K loans that they're doing.
Right.
Yeah. So, FHA has a limited one, which is just for smaller projects. That one's going to be limited to $35,000. That can't be more than that. And it's going to be, you know, more for general, I don't want to say all cosmetic, but just smaller stuff. If there's anything really wrong with the house, like foundation, that kind of thing, you can't use the FHA limited. Now, the standard one, that one doesn't have a limit on how big the job can be. But you also have to use a general contractor. On the smaller one, you can use up to three of them. So if you just got a couple of little projects, you can get a plumber and a, you know, the electrician and whatever, the landscaper guy, and that'll be good enough. You don't have to go get a general contractor who then hires all those other guys.
Okay.
But on the standard one, yeah, there you got to get a regular contractor who is in charge of all the subcontractors.
Now, what about down payment requirements? So how much money am I going to have to come up with to do something like this?
Well, that's a good question. I'm glad you asked that. So on a Fannie Mae home style loan, the minimum is going to be 5%. So it's really not too much different than a regular loan when you're purchasing the house. But it's going to be 5% of the loan amount that you're going to be ending, you know, which will be higher than what you bought the property for. So they take into account, you know, what the property is going to be worth later, and it's got to be at least 95% loan to value of that number. So 5%.
So an easy example of that is like if you're going to buy something for $180,000. And you're going to put $20,000 into it, mm-hmm. That's going to get you up to $200,000. So 5% of that is $10,000, right?
Right, exactly.
Now, obviously, you're going to have closing costs and all that other stuff as well. But as far as the down payment, that's how it works, right?
Right. And that's on a purchase, right? Obviously.
Good
example. If you were doing a refinance, because you can do this as a refinance on a house that you already own.
Okay. So if I have equity.
As long as you got equity and it doesn't exceed that, then you're fine. You know, you're not having to come up with a big chunk of cash to do the renovation. On the FHA, both limited and the standard ones, it's the minimum is going to be 3.5%, just like a regular FHA loan. So as long as you got 3.5% to put down when you're purchasing, or you have at least that much equity when you're doing the renovation as a refinance, then you're going to be fine.
Very cool.
Yeah. And one of the questions that does come up a lot is, can I do this for an investment property? Let's say I'm looking to
Ooh, that is a good question.
Get my first, you know, I want to get my first condo or house or something that I want to use as a rental. Well, on the FHA ones, nope, can't do that. It's strictly owner occupied. You can't do that. But on the Fannie Mae Homestyle, you can. You can do it for second homes. You can do it for an investment property. So it's you know up to four units. I mean, you can't do it on a big, huge apartment building. But you know, if it's a duplex or a quadplex, I guess they call them. There's a few of those around. You can do it on that. And so it's a great way to be able to get a good deal on a property that maybe you otherwise wouldn't be able to afford and be able to do, you know, get your foot in the door as far as being a landlord and having some rental properties.
Exciting. Building wealth.
Building wealth. Exactly. That's exactly. Right.
Well, here, let's talk about the process.
Okay.
Just give them kind of an idea of what they're looking at, because we've already talked about general contractors. We've talked about some of the financing requirements up front, and you would have to qualify for it just like a regular loan.
Right, right.
But the difference in this process is you get pre-approved first. I mean, just like you would a regular loan. Then you get your general contractor to do the bid. Then you do everything else just as if you were going to do a normal loan. And then once you close, that's when the contractor is able to get a draw from the lender to be able to start doing the work. And then once they finish the work, or, you know, depending on the loan type, you can get a couple of draws throughout the period. But once all the work is done, there's a final inspection to make sure everything matches what was agreed to up front. And then the builder gets paid out. And then that's when you start the payments on your loan. So it is very much like a regular loan process. But there's, you know, a little added extra step in there involving the general contractor.
Right. So the contractor does have to be approved. There's a questionnaire they need to fill out, and they're, you know, they do need to go through a little process to make sure that they are in fact qualified.
Right.
And of course that is to protect you. And, you know, contractors usually have no problem filling that out because it's a job for them. So, you know, I'm sure they've come across it many, many times. But if you want to find out more about renovation loans, I mean, there's so much more to talk about, but it's a great way to be able to renovate without having to have deep pockets. You can hit us up at highnosehomeshow.com if you'd like to set up a time to come in and talk with us. We'd be more than happy to do that. But we're going to come back in just a few minutes here on the show, and we're going to be talking about your listener mail. We've got some burning questions that came in this week, and we're going to tackle those when we come back here at High Nose Home Show. Come on back.
This old house wants new wife. This old house was home of comfort and sweet
home. All right, welcome back to High Nose Home Show. We're having a great time here today. I'm here with Steve Kenny, mortgage guy extraordinaire.
Hey, everybody.
And our special guest that we're going to be talking to a little bit later, David Wilbanks, is here in the studio with us. Although not saying much so far, I think he's kind of shy. Are you shy there, David?
I'm not shy. You're talking about topics with mortgages that I'm not real familiar with, and we haven't gotten to my favorite topic,
which is
insurance.
Oh, I was going to say, I thought it was going to be golf.
Golf is a close second, though. I got to imagine.
Close second. Okay. Well, as promised, we're going to hit the High Nose Home Show mailbag. You can go to highnosehomeshow.com and submit your questions there. If there's something that you have a burning desire to know about, we'll do our best to answer it for you. So what's in the mailbag this week, Steve?
All right. So the first question we have is from Jeff in Lafayette, and he wants to know, how much of a down payment do I need?
Oh, well, thanks, Jeff, for the question. Well, it's going to depend on the loan that you do. The minimum is going to be, on a first-time homebuyer program, is going to be 3%. FHA is going to be 3.5%, and on a conventional, it's going to be 5%. So those are going to be your minimums. Unless you do a USDA loan or a VA loan, both of those types of loans allow you to go to 100% of the purchase price.
Very
so
cool.
You don't need a down payment on those. But with a USDA loan, you're going to have to be in a rural area. So that's, you're going to be outside of town a little bit. You're not going to be, you know, downtown Nashville, you know, in Sobro or Soho or whatever, you know.
Bummer.
And on a VA loan, that one can work anywhere, but you have to be a veteran. And unfortunately, the way VA loans are structured, they're, unless you have what the VA considers a disability, where you receive some sort of disability payment, or they consider you at least 10% or more disabled, that's when they waive all their funding fees, all their normal fees. The normal VA loan without, you know, where you do have to pay your fees, they can be pretty darn expensive. So they're not always that great of a deal for the veteran. I'm really sorry that the Veterans Administration doesn't take better care of our veterans that way.
You know, I've actually heard from some veterans, though, that they like paying that fee because they feel like they're contributing back. Because that money goes to the VA. That money doesn't go to the right. mortgage company or anybody else. So, you know, it can be like doing your part.
Yeah, okay, I could see that. I could see that. What's the next question we got there?
All right, so next one is actually same question from two different people. So Alan in Asheville and Stacy in Nolensville want to know, what are closing costs and how much should I expect them to be?
Wow, that's a loaded topic. Well, first of all, the term closing costs tends to be kind of a catch-all term for everything you got to bring to the table when you purchase a house or refinance a house. And it doesn't always, it's not always a closing cost. You know, some of the things that you're going to pay anyway, like your homeowner's insurance, your property taxes, those get rolled into your escrow account, and those get collected at closing to fund your escrow account. A certain amount gets collected. So that kind of gets lumped into closing costs unfairly, I think. A lot of times people...
I'd agree with that.
Yeah. But most of the closing costs that you end up paying are from a third-party company, because there's a whole lot of different entities involved in any purchase or refinance. There's the government. There's the title company. You know, there's an appraiser. You know, it just goes on and on. There's a lot of different fees and things that any lender doesn't really have any control over, but they have to be paid. You know, the government wants their transfer stamps, tax stamps. Doesn't matter who the mortgage company is.
Well, yeah, and actually, even if you pay cash to buy a house, you still have to pay those tax stamps anyway.
That's right. That's right. You do. So how much should your closing costs be? Probably usually about, 3% or so of the purchase price or of the loan amount is kind of a good rule of thumb. And of course, that it varies, because it varies on the property. It's kind of hard to – it's like asking, what size suit should a man wear? Well, there's a million different size men, you know, and you're going to have a million different size suits. So you're not going to have a one size fits all for most things, maybe baseball caps, but even they have an adjustable strap on them. So,
yeah. Well, and one of the cool things too, that, you know, we see a somewhat fair occasion, I would say, not on every single deal, but sometimes you can actually get the seller to pay those for you.
That is true. I mean, if there's an agreeable seller, you have a good real estate agent who's able to negotiate that for you, then yeah, they can contribute up to 6% on some loans of the purchase price. So
can you just loan more money and pay it that way?
Sometimes it works that way. I mean, technically on a purchase, you still have to come up with your down payment. You know, that can't be credited to you by anybody. You still got to come up with that. But as far as closing costs, yeah, that can be either entirely eliminated or significantly reduced with a contribution from the seller. All right, Steve, what else we got in the mailbag?
All right, next question is Terry in Nashville. Hi, no, I keep hearing terms like seller's market and buyer's market. What's the diff?
So a seller's market, that's usually when there's a whole lot of demand for houses. There's a whole lot of buyers and not that many homes on the market. It usually, you know, we actually have the trifecta. We've got all three things happening in Nashville right now. We've got a hot labor market that's bringing lots of companies in, and a lot of people buying houses are coming in looking for those houses. We got relatively low rates right now, so that makes a lot of people interested in going out there and looking for a house. And on top of that, we have not that many homes on the market, especially in the like $250,000 and lower price point. I think I read a statistic, we talked about it a little bit last week, but I read a statistic that in Rutherford County last month, there were 1,000 people looking for homes in that price range, and there were 5 on the market.
Wow.
So you can imagine that kind of competition. Basically, that's what, you know, that's a seller's market. They can pretty much ask for a lot more money than they normally would in a buyer's market, where it's the other way around. You know, home prices are going down. There's reduced demand. There's a whole lot more houses than there are buyers. And so sellers have to be a little bit more flexible and reduce their price, you know, so it's good for the buyer, not necessarily for the seller. One thing that a lot of people don't consider is that natural disasters can cause that as well. You know, because something comes in and like the flood back in 2010, some of the neighborhoods that got hit pretty hard, housing prices went down for a little while in those areas.
You know, it's funny you bring that up. Actually, my neighbor who moved to the Nashville area from New Orleans, they had just finished building a house when Hurricane Katrina hit.
Oh, wow.
The price of their house almost doubled overnight.
Really?
Because all of these people were displaced and, you know, people still had to work. Their jobs are still in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. So they were looking for places to buy. So they ended up selling their house for a huge profit. And that's when they moved to Nashville.
Okay. Well, yeah. Good for them. Good for them. Well, we got any other questions in the mailbag there?
All right. So this next one is Linda in Old Hickory.
Hey, Linda.
It's about home inspections. So, Hino, I already had to pay for an appraisal. Do I really need a home inspection?
Well, you know what? It's technically not required to have a home inspection. So just in case you don't know, an appraisal is where an inspector goes out and appraises the property to determine the value of that property based on current market conditions. So, you know, if you're buying the house for $300,000, you want to be sure that that house is actually worth $300,000.
Right.
You know, you don't want to pay $300,000 that's for something that's only worth $250,000, for example. So that's what their job is, just to make sure that the house is worth what everybody says it's worth. The inspection, however, is not required by the mortgage company, and that's where a guy goes in, or a gal, either way, goes in and goes through the house with a fine-tooth comb. You know, does the plumbing work? Is the roof in good shape? Does the HVAC work? And just everything that, you know, is the foundation any good? Just everything that might be wrong with the house, they inspect it so that you can be sure that you're buying a house that's in good shape and that you're not going to be faced with some huge repair bill like 2 weeks after closing because you've just spent all your money buying the house. You know, you don't want to find out that the roof leaks now at that point, you know?
Right.
So while it's not required, it's an awfully good idea to do.
Well, yeah.
It's going to be the best $300 or $400 you've ever spent.
Absolutely. And something I tell, especially first-time home buyers, because they're new to the process, they've never done this before, there is always going to be something wrong with the house or something that shows up in the home inspection. Not necessarily something wrong, but you know, it could just be normal wear and tear. They're going to point those things out. And you can see that sort of stuff. But, you know, I always tell first-time home buyers, don't be afraid if something comes back. That's the inspector's job, is to point out everything about the house.
Yeah, this one sink drains a little slowly. Okay, we'll get some Drano. You know, I mean, it's not
that's a
huge
good example.
You know, or this light switch doesn't quite work properly. Well, light switches are easy to replace. So, I mean, those are the kind of things that, you know, most sellers are more than happy to fix just to make you happy so that they can get the deal closed.
Right. All right, so next question we've got is Dan from Mount Juliet. Mm-hmm. He says, "I know I just got married and we want to buy a house. My wife's credit is not so good. Uh-oh. Does she have to be on the loan? And what does that mean? Does that mean she doesn't own the home along with me?"
No, it doesn't. And no, she does not have to be on the loan. Thanks for your question, Dan. Does not have to be on the loan. It's kind of like when you go and sign up for your phone service or your internet. You know, usually one of the two people living in the house goes and signs up for it. It doesn't mean that you not both homeowners, it's just that person has that bill in their name. The mortgage is kind of the same way. Really, the only reason to have two people on a mortgage application is if you really need the income on the application in order to qualify. But if you don't need that, if one of you can handle that qualification by yourself, there's no reason to have the second person on there. They're both going to be still on title. Both you and your wife, Dan, will still be owners of the house. You're both homeowners. If something were to happen to you, it's still her house as well. So no, she does not have to be part of the mortgage. And yes, she still will own the house. I think we got time for one more.
One more. Okay. So Scott in Nashville.
What? Oh,
this is a good one.
Okay.
What the heck kind of name is Hino?
Really? Well, thank you, Scott. Thank you. I think I know which Scott that is, too. Well, it's my dad's name. My dad's from Germany, born and raised there, and I got named after him when I was way too young to protest. So I'm sort of stuck with it at this point. Although I will say they were pushing for, when my son was born, they were really pushing for him to be named Hino, and I had to kind of break it to him that, yeah, that was just not.
Isn't there a game in Florida with a stick and they have a ball and they throw it real quick?
Hialeah. Yeah, not quite the same thing. Yeah, not quite the same thing. But
that's
anyway.
The first thing I thought of when I first heard your name.
Oh, really? I get Hawaiian a lot. People think I'm Hawaiian or something, or Japanese or something. But nope. My dad's from Germany. I got named after him before I could do anything about it. So, and I'm used to it now. So,
and you're definitely the only Hino that I know.
That's true. Well, I'll introduce you to my dad sometime, and then you'll know too, and that'll be pretty awesome. Listen, thanks for your questions. Go to hinoshomeshow.com if you want to submit your questions that we can read for y'all next week. In the meantime, we're going to come back in just a few minutes with a whole lot more great stuff here on Hino's Home Show. Welcome back to Hino's Home Show. I'm Hino. This right here is my home show, and we are going to be visiting with Mr. David Wilbanks. David Wilbanks just joined us in the studio, and he's an insurance guy extraordinaire. You know, insurance is one of those things that we all need. We all hate paying for.
But you like it when you need it.
But you love it when you need it. So I've known David for many, many years. He's a good guy, and he's done a great job for me and my family and many of my clients over the years. So wanted to bring him in and kind of talk about some of the burning questions that I have about insurance and some other people have too. So David, welcome the show. I guess one of the big questions that I have is, why the heck do premiums differ from company to company? You know, you're insuring the same person, same set of facts. Why are they different?
That amazes me too.
Does it? Okay, I'm not alone.
Yeah, because I have a rater.
Yeah.
And I put the name, date of birth, social, the address, the past address, the demographics of the home, year, make, model, whatever.
Yeah.
So I put all that in there and I push a button and it goes out to 15 insurance companies and they come back. And it's all across the board.
Really?
It seems like it's no rhyme or reason. But at the insurance company, they're going to their book of business. And they're seeing how those demographics are doing inside that insurance company.
So they look at their current batch of clients that they have and how many claims and so on and so forth.
And they see how it's trending. And if it's trending bad, you get a high rate. The other insurance company, they're trending at a good place. So they want more of that business.
Okay.
According to their book of business.
Okay.
So.
Because I'm guessing they all pretty much use the same set of facts, you know. You know.
If the house is built in 2018, it's still built in 2018.
Okay. Yeah, that doesn't change.
Doesn't change.
Well, does a house, now that you bring that up, does a house that's an older house, maybe built in, I don't know, 1973? Was that going to be more expensive to insure?
It will, just like the human body. Older people cost more to keep
alive.
Now,
you had to bring that up, didn't you? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so an older house, it has more problems, too.
I don't like the way you looked at me when you said that. You know,
I always just saw the gray hair. I have gray hair.
Yes, you do.
It'll be okay.
So I guess an older house would have more problems if it hasn't been kept up or, you know, that kind of thing. All right.
Yeah.
Well, what are companies looking for specifically in, let's say, you? If you go and
the best
try to get some insurance,
are people
what are they looking for?
Well, they're looking for someone who pays their insurance premium on time.
Always a plus.
That's one thing.
Yeah.
Then that you've had no claims. And so they know that you probably won't have claims with them either.
Okay. You pull some kind of report, right? Kind of like a credit report?
It's a clue report.
Clue? Okay.
It's a clue report, and it lets them know if there's any claims out there. And then they are also just looking at the demographics of the person, if they've had other claims somewhere else or something like that.
Okay. So it's not necessarily just homeowners insurance. If they have auto claims, is that going to affect their homeowners insurance?
It certainly will.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Huh.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah. Let's say you're filing window claims all the time or... And they even go down to towing claims. So if you were to have like 20 towing claims, they know that you know how to file a claim.
And you're not shy about it.
And you're not shy about it. And you're more likely to file a claim than the person that never files a claim on anything.
Okay. Well, what about stuff like, you know, you have claims like hail damage or you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. Is that going to count against you?
That's not.
Okay. Well, that's good.
That you cannot control, hailstorms or anything like that. If you just look at it and say, well, I couldn't control that. That's an act of God. Well, then they're not going to hold that against you.
Okay. Well, that's good. That's good to know. Now, you mentioned that auto insurance claims could actually hurt you on the homeowner's insurance side. What about if you were to combine your policies? I mean, does that help you at all if you say, hey, insurance company, yeah, we'll do both?
Yeah, you'll get multi-policy discounts, home, auto. If you own more than two automobiles, you'll start getting multi-car discounts also.
Really? So there's a good reason, a good excuse to go buy another car.
That's right.
It's for the insurance, honey. You know, I think that'll work.
That's the excuse that I used.
Is it? And how'd that work for you?
It worked out great. I got another car.
You have another car. Yeah, that he actually got a cool little classic car that he fixed up. It's really neat. Well, okay, so that's kind of cool. So since homeowners insurance is a big part of most people's mortgage payment, because it's included for most people in their escrow, what are some of the things that you can do to lower that payment? I mean, what are some of the things that you can do to bring down your insurance and maybe not mess up your insurance?
Yeah, you don't want to short the coverage on your home, but if you wanted to lower the premium amount, you can choose a higher deductible.
A higher deductible. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the main thing. So that's the main thing. That means more out of pocket. If there is a claim, there's more money you're having to come up with. Mm-hmm. Okay. And could you reduce some of the other things?
You can reduce some things like water backup coverage.
Okay.
You could reduce liability coverage, medical payments to others, some things like that. But I really think that you would be hurting yourself if you reduced liability coverage, because that's going to be one of your biggest claims. They're far and few between, but when they happen, it's devastating to a family.
Really?
Somebody comes over the house, they're your good friend, you've known them for 20 years, and all of a sudden they step on a rake and it hits them in the nose and they sue you. Mm. Things change. They call Morgan and Morgan, and it just snowballs out of control, and they end up suing you.
Oh, that's terrible.
And so instead of having a small little hospital visit, you're in a lawsuit. So that's why you need high liability limits.
I've seen that happen, actually. Uh-huh. It happened to my parents. A friend, like you said, known him forever and ever, slipped and fell on the sidewalk outside the house and actually sued him. And it was like, what the heck are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, because it's stuck, not like my parents owned the sidewalk, you know, it's like, but still it became a thing. And that's you just can't believe it when that happens.
They're not friends anymore, are they?
You know what? They did stay friends. That was the weird thing about it. You know, it was actually forgotten after a while, but for the time that it was going on, it was kind of stressful. So you can reduce coverages, you can reduce increase deductibles. Mm-hmm. What can you do?
You can buy a newer house too.
Okay.
Because new home construction will be a lot less.
Really? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, and that's kind of like you were talking earlier, with a newer house, hopefully there's not going to be as much that goes wrong with it, right?
That's correct.
Okay. All right.
Now, we're talking about newer houses and older houses with maintenance, but your homeowner's insurance doesn't cover like things that just go wrong. Like it doesn't cover your HVAC, right? Or your stove or things like that.
Not a normal policy. It won't.
Well, that's more like a home warranty.
You can get home warranty
type of policy. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can get some mechanical coverage in your homeowner's policy. Some companies will offer that. It's an additional premium. But
of course it is.
I know it.
Yeah.
But you know, the HVAC system, it ages. It's going to start breaking down. So that's going to be done at an actual cash value basis. So it depreciates too.
Okay.
So
okay.
I'm not going to buy that for my house.
Okay. Gotcha. Well, one of the big questions that I've had when I got my own insurance policy over the years is that why is it that, you know, you pay, for example, I don't know, $100,000 for your house, and it says, oh, but we're going to rebuild your house. It's only going to be $70,000 that we're going to rebuild it for. So you're thinking, wait a minute, I paid a lot more than that for my house. Why are you only insuring it for this lower amount to rebuild it? What I'm talking about is, okay, I bought my house in my neighborhood for this price, and the company's insuring it for a lower rebuild price. That makes me very uneasy. Like, yeah, I'm not going to be able to get the same house back when it gets rebuilt.
Well, an insurance company's going to guarantee that they're going to a dwelling expanded replacement cost rider on that policy.
Okay.
So we put it in the rater. It came out to be a rebuild at this cost.
Mm-hmm.
That's the insurance company's opinion.
Okay. So I'm guessing, if I'm understanding you right, then as far as like the value of the rebuild, they're not taking the land into consideration. So one of the reasons that the rebuild value is so much lower is because the land didn't go away, and it's worth something. So if you paid $300,000 for a house, but it's only going to cost $250,000 to rebuild it, well, that's probably because the land is worth something, and that's where that extra value comes in. So don't be worried that the rebuild value is so much less than what you paid for the house. Am I right about that?
You're correct.
Yay. Well, you know what we got coming up right now here in the spring? We got hail season coming up. It's good old roof.
One of the most likely claims.
Is it really? Mm-hmm. The whole roof damage thing?
Yep.
Well, as an insurance guy, how do you feel about roof damage? What's your take on roof damage?
Well, there's a history there.
Really? Okay.
Back in 2012, there was a big major hailstorm.
Okay.
And roofs were getting replaced everywhere. So you could have had a roof back then, and it could have been 30 years old, been having hail damage on it, and you would have gotten a totally brand new roof.
But and most homeowners are thinking, yes.
Yes.
Yee-hee.
Yes. Well, I didn't get my roof done then. But,
okay.
But so now what happens is most carriers will give 10 years, the first 10 years with full replacement cost back. All right. And then it goes to actual cash value. Some carriers will go to actual cash value day one.
Mm.
So they're depreciating that roof every year.
Yeah. All right. Well, you've answered so many great questions. How can people get in touch with you and find out about your great independent carrier skills?
I think they need to go to our website.
Yeah.
At MontgomeryandAssociates.com.
You guys are fancy. A website and everything?
Got a website.
Dang.
They can look up David Wilbanks and they can send me an email.
Well, David Wilbanks from Montgomery & Associates, it's been a pleasure having you on. Thanks so much. Hey, stick around. We're going to be talking about home trends in the next segment. What's kind of hot going on right now in the home building world and what you might be seeing at the next remodeling show and that kind of thing. Stick around. We'll be right back here on Hino's Home Show. All right, welcome back to Hino's Home Show. We are going to be talking this segment about great home trends that are coming up and ones that have been around for a while and have they outlived their usefulness? Mainly, that's the open floor plan. I think that's kind of a love-hate thing for a lot of people. Is like whenever you see one of these home shows where they're blowing out walls, they always go for the open floor plan. That's, you know, Property Brothers or, you know, Chip and Joanna Gaines, whatever. They're always blowing out walls and making an open floor plan. So I have an open floor plan at my house, and I don't know that I like it that much. You know, really? I liked it at first, you know, but there's some downsides. There's some upsides to it, but there's some downsides to it that I didn't expect when we bought the house.
See, I'm actually... Go ahead.
I got a home in the 1960s.
Yeah?
And it's got a support wall down the middle.
Right.
And my wife wants to open some of that up.
Okay.
So I'm in a closed house.
You're in a closed house now, and she wants to open it up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Are you ready to make that transition?
I'm ready.
Oh, look at that.
Wow.
I'm not going to take out the whole wall.
Okay.
Like a 10-foot section, and she only wants it for the light to come in.
Well, you know they sell lamps at Home Depot.
Well,
I don't know
there's a difference between sunlight and lamps.
Well, now, if you listen last week, there is a $600 Dyson lamp that will simulate
sunlight.
Sunlight.
There you go. Problem solved.
Well, that's about how much it costs to open up that wall.
Okay. All right.
See, I'm personally a big proponent of the open floor plan.
Okay.
You know, I think it depends on the actual house itself, like how the house is set up. You know, if you have one that you can come in and knock a wall out and make some more space, just makes the whole house feel bigger.
Yeah.
And like our house, for example, it's a little bit newer. Our house was built as an open floor plan. And it actually works really great for us. You know, when we have people over to entertain, we get to flow between the living room and the kitchen and everybody gets to talk. And, you know, it's really a great time. I actually really like open floor plans.
Well, that is something to consider. I mean, one of the things that I don't like about it, though, is it is the fact that you are on top of each other, especially like with the kitchen. If you've got a mess in the kitchen, it's a mess in the entire house because you can't just like close the kitchen door. Oh, the kitchen's over there. We'll clean it tomorrow kind of thing. It's a mess that's now affecting the rest of the house, or the smells that you might, you know, depending on what you made for dinner, you know, aren't confined to just the kitchen. Now the entire house smells like, you know, last night's salmon, you know, or whatever it was that you made.
Well, you should be grilling your salmon outside.
Anyway. Yes. Yeah, see, that's the mistake I've been making. I should be going outside.
You need an exhaust fan.
And I need... Okay, guys. Okay, an exhaust fan. All right, that's fine. I mean, really, the main thing is just the noise. It's very difficult to contain the noise with at our house anyway, with the open floor plan. I mean, I always joke that if a mouse passed gas on the other side of the house, it sounds like thunder on my side of the house. I mean, it's just like one big speaker, you know, and you can't really have. A private conversation unless you go lock yourself in the bathroom or something, because you can hear everything. And I'm just wondering, is it like that with your open floor plan?
You know, it is like that in the living area because the living area is all open. But on the other floors, it's one of those tall, skinny houses. So anybody who's familiar with Nashville, you know what I'm talking about.
Yep, yep.
So on the first floor is actually a bedroom and where our garage is. Now, we actually turn it into an office. So our office is on the first floor. The second floor is where the living area is with the kitchen, dining room, living room. And then on the third floor is where we have two other bedrooms. So if my wife's upstairs in the bedroom and I'm downstairs in the office, we don't even know that we're both home. We may have to call each other and say, hey, where'd you go? I need to talk to you. And sure enough, we're in the house.
Steve, that sounds heavenly, actually.
It works good for us.
You know, because we, with all the kids that we got and everything, it just sure would be nice to be in a part of the house where nobody knew you were there.
that's the garage.
That's the garage.
You got to get a man cave.
I do have to get a man cave. I don't have one of those yet. Or, you know, but it is nice having separate areas. I mean, a lot of families need, you know, the wife might have the sewing room or the husband might have the sewing room, or here in Nashville, there's a lot of music rooms. You got to have a music room, place to go put all your guitars and have a writing session or something like that. My wife's a songwriter. Actually, David, your wife's a songwriter too. So we have experience with that. You know,
Leave the house.
You just leave the house. Okay. They don't really ask for your input when they're in there doing their thing.
No.
Okay. All right. All right.
I try to give it.
Yeah.
But they don't take it.
They don't take it. All right. Well, some of the other trends that are kind of happening right now with builders is things are having a lot more color. I mean, for a long time, the thing was white cabinetry in the kitchen, for example, you know, or the cream-colored cabinetry. And now it seems like they're putting in blue cabinets and green cabinets. It's just, you know, color. They're really going towards color, which I kind of like. I wonder, though, how quickly you would get tired of that.
Yeah, that's how I feel about that, too. Because we see some of these, like, you know, if you watch HGTV or any of these home shows, we're big fans of Million Dollar Listing for anybody who watches that.
All right.
So you look at these houses, and they're multiple Million Dollar houses, and they've got red cabinets.
Wow.
And usually they're like, I think they're moving towards like a European style too, right?
Uh-huh, yeah.
So moving away from the traditional, you know, pull out the door and it more like swings open, like you pull it down and it opens up almost mm-hmm. like a garage. So I think it's really interesting, but I don't know. I don't know if I could live with it every day.
Well, I think it's something you could get tired of.
I'm not going to do that.
You're not going to put a blue cabinetry in your house?
Blue or red.
Interesting. Well, the flip side, though, is weird. In the same kitchen, countertops are actually flipping the other direction. They're actually going towards white. Quartz has become a thing, you know, white countertops mm-hmm. with your multicolored cabinets. So I don't know how I feel about that either, because be a lot harder to keep clean or clean looking anyway.
Well, if you
that's ask, what I love about granite is like, you know, if you got a couple of spots of something on there, you can't really tell because it's, you know, it's camouflaged.
Well, yeah. If you ask me, I think the reason we're moving away from granite is because everybody's got granite in their house. So I think we already dug it all out of the ground. I think that's why we're moving towards quartz.
I think they've got a plenty. I think they got a good supply of granite left over. I don't think there's a problem of that. But yeah, maybe it's because it's just been done that you just try to do something different, I guess.
Yeah.
That makes sense to me.
You know, you were telling me a good example of this actually is with brass. Brass is coming back, right?
It is coming back. I think for a long time, that rubbed bronze, you know, that brown finish on handles and door handles and faucets and stuff like that. Yeah. Well, that kind of was everywhere. Mm-hmm. And now we're kind of seeing that brass is making a comeback and builders are starting to use that a lot more. Maybe people are getting sick of that. Maybe it's the same thing. You know, it's just been done so much that people are tired of it.
Yeah, that would make sense. I mean, we sold a house a couple of years ago. Well, we bought it, I don't know, 5 years ago, and then we sold it a couple of years ago. And the real estate agent, when we bought it, we pointed out the fact that we hated the brass fixtures everywhere.
Yeah, I was never a big fan either.
Yeah, so when we bought the house and we closed on it, first thing we did was change all of that. It really didn't cost that much, maybe 100, 150 bucks, something like that.
Yeah.
And the agent told us, you're probably going to get some resale value off that.
Really?
Now, that was trendy at the time. If we were smart, we would have saved the old brass fixings. And then when we went to sell it, just put those back on. That would have been a smart
So what did you replace it with?
We went with like a brushed nickel or brushed aluminum or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was kind of in at the time.
Yeah. You know. It's funny how things kind of fade in and out of popularity. One of the other things that I'm seeing is concrete is kind of making a comeback, you know, concrete for the flooring. So rather than, you know, hardwoods or carpet, you know, they actually do the whole polish up the concrete, maybe stain it and give it a finish. You see that
they
a lot.
They do that for countertops, too.
Yeah, they do that for countertops, too. They kept beautiful concrete
countertops.
And they
countertop. Look good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're heavy, like that I would imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that design. Here's what I will say. I think, and this kind of goes for anything. Now, listen, I'm not a style person, so don't take advice from me. But I think that if you're going to do something like that that's kind of cool, new, and trendy, I think it's all got to fit together and make sense.
Yeah.
You know, like if you took a classical style home, you couldn't just throw down concrete floors. Like that would, it would look like you're skimping.
Yeah.
You
know? Or it would look like you're trying too hard.
Yeah. But if you're, if you're in a loft in downtown Nashville and you've got concrete floors, like that's the cool thing.
Yeah. Especially if they're nicely polished up and everything. You know, one thing that I saw for a while and went away and now I'm seeing come back is those sinks that are like, they look like a bowl. In like bathrooms where it looks like a big bowl sitting on the counter, but that's the sink.
I think they're doing that with bathtubs too. We actually have one
that looks
house.
Like a bowl.
Well, not like a bowl, but it's like a standalone bathtub. You know,
okay, like the clawfoot kind.
Yeah, but it's not a clawfoot. It's just it's basically a clawfoot tub, but there's no claw feet on the bottom.
Huh? I have not seen that.
Yeah, my wife loves it. Okay. I don't take baths, but
you don't take baths. Okay,
it looks pretty.
Now, does it have the all the jets and the water and?
Ours that doesn't, no.
Does not?
No.
You got gypped.
Yep. Yeah. We did.
I would.
But I like that look better than it being, built into a corner. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because a lot of those, it looks like, the tub is round and then the whole thing is square. And so to me, it's like, why would you have something round or oval in a square little box? So with these, it just sits there in the middle of the floor. So it almost kind of looks like a decoration by itself.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, another thing that I'm seeing, especially in bathrooms and in kitchens too, is backsplashes are kind of going up to the wall. They're all the way up to the ceiling now. Whereas they don't, before they would just kind of maybe just go up to the bottom of the cabinet and that's about as high as the backsplash would go. And it would kind of follow that line around the kitchen. And now it seems like a lot of people are making it just go all the way up to the whole wall's covered in tile now, just. Is for the backsplash.
Is that just a way to sell more tile?
It could be. It could be that, big tile is behind this, Yeah. It's a conspiracy. It's a tile conspiracy.
Maybe the cooking shows, because they're slopping all those knives.
It's probably easier to clean, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I honestly never understood where you would get the little tiles where it's like maybe, 3 or 4 inches running along the top because then you've got the wall there. So it made sense to go up to the cabinets, but all the way up to the ceiling, really?
Yeah, it just kind of makes a statement, I don't know if I would do it, but yeah, it does look nice from what I've seen on some of these shows. Oh. All right, so now we've got our remodeling plans set for next time. We're all going to go home and tile our walls right up to the top. David, thank you so much for joining us this week talking to us about insurance. MontgomeryandAssociates.com is David's website. Go check him out. David Wilbanks. And as always, Steve Kenny's been a great partner to have on the show here today with sharing his mortgage knowledge. You can find us at HinosHomeShow.com. Shoot us an email. Shoot us a question for next week. We'd love to hear from you. Until we see you next week.